Welcome to Honest Jams, the podcast where two friends made a transformation to their creative lives, which saw them writing a new song every week based on a new prompt and getting guests to do the same. Those two friends were myself, Walker.
I'm Al.
And we are so excited to have Pasha Patrosian. I've been following your music for some years now as we met at a really cool house show in Chicago. It was Halloween 2017, but yeah, neither of us was playing the show. It was at this collective in Chicago called Earphoria, which I'm sure you've been to a lot more events there besides that Halloween show. Such a cool place. And I want to actually, they're transforming into another really cool thing coming up pretty soon. So at the end of the show, we'll talk more about that. So Pasha, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We usually like to start off by talking about our guests' like musical origins. Do you have memories of your first experiences with music?
So I grew up in Russia, in Moscow, Russia. My parents tried to get me to learn piano when I was six, or maybe older. I might be off a little bit on that, you know, how memories work.
Oh, yeah.
But I did not enjoy it. Definitely preferred to play outside instead. And now I'm forever kicking myself for not starting earlier.
For not being in the long line of amazing Russian pianists.
But yeah, who knows? I mean, it's been a weird journey. So, you know, I think maybe I would just be playing sheet music right now if that happened, though.
Yeah.
So who knows?
Yeah, it can be really regimented in that kind of environment. Is that what you kind of didn't kind of take to initially?
Yeah, I didn't really do any kind of formal training until college, actually. I didn't take any music classes in high school. Actually, I tried to, but I took a keyboarding class and I was really excited, and it turned out to be typing. So, which is good because I need that too. So I'm not really formally trained, except I took some theory classes, some ear training classes in college, but primarily I learned just by making weird songs on my dad's old computer. He had this program called Cakewalk.
Oh yeah.
1995 or something.
Oh yeah.
And I was really getting into some like weird stuff, you know, in high school. Weird for me because my dad like introduced me to some rock bands back in Russia. It was like Deep Purple and Black Sabbath and Pink Floyd and stuff like that. So he was really into that kind of junk. And then when I moved to the States, that's kind of what I listened to. And eventually I ended up meeting this guy, Chris Haltech. He passed away, but he introduced me to Nine Inch Nails. And I was like, whoa, music can be so weird and so chaotic. And I was like, I'm going to try to make stuff like this. And it was not like that at all. But that was
never
where I started.
When you've kind of try to emulate something, it always kind of like filters through the, you know, person that you are, unless you're the type of person that is specifically like, I'm gonna recreate an exact tone of something. You know, like it's always going to be kind of filtered through you.
So I ended up getting into a bunch of electronic artists, like, or, you know, like Bjork, Aphex Twin, stuff like that. And I ended up trying to kind of like emulate their sounds with the little knowledge of music that I had. So yeah, for a while I didn't speak English like super well when I moved. I was 11. So that was kind of my outlet. And it was really funny. I actually met one of my first collaborators. I think I gave him either like a CD of my songs or something. His name's Tyler Utters. Yeah, he was like, who is this weird Russian kid giving me his music? And we ended up collaborating on some tracks and being in a metal band together and all this other stuff. So that was like kind of the beginning of where I started.
So how soon after you had a bad experience with trying to learn piano did you then pick up another instrument?
There was like a big gap. I distinctly remember when I was younger, like back in Russia, I had a really mean music teacher that basically told me like, you will never be able to sing. And it's like, I know. And I was like, okay. And I think that just like killed my vibe for a while. And then eventually I didn't care and I started doing it anyway. This was like here in the States. So yeah, teenage, like high school is kind of when I really got into it. And so I was like in a band with some friends doing like really bad, like Green Day covers and stuff.
Nice.
I think that was my first like band.
Yeah.
And then I joined a metal band called Inocula. Well, I started it with some friends, and there was like weirdly a metal scene in the suburb that I lived in that was like pretty big. So we ended up, you know, doing that for a while, for like 4 years. And then I had another project called Bridges of Königsberg, which was like my post-rock days. So I really got into post-rock while I was in metal, and nobody understood, you know, how emotional post-rock can
be. So. Yeah, at that age, you're so attached to like the different labels of things, and you know, like you're so clinging to the identity of like what it means to be into a specific type of music or something like that, that like people like judge each other socially based on those kind of things. And it's really unhealthy, actually.
Yeah, oh my God, I don't even know what I am anymore.
Right. Like, well, there's no, who cares?
Yeah.
So you actually had, in your teenage years, you were like performing music, like as part of like a scene.
Mm-hmm.
Was that kind of like just an end to itself, or were you kind of like, you know, trying to do something with your music?
Yeah. I mean, I think as most younger people, I definitely had a lot of aspirations to, you know, do it as my job. That was my biggest thing that I was trying to do, and I think a lot of people in the scene were trying to do that, but we were playing music that was really kind of inaccessible for the general public. I don't really know why that was even a thought.
Yeah.
I think that kind of went away, and it definitely became more and more about just the process of creation. I think that in itself, it's like really simple for me at this point. It's just making things makes me feel really good instead of just taking in all the time, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's really that simple at this point for me, and whatever comes from that, you know, and honestly also relationships too. I feel like for me being in projects, you really get to know people. They get to know like the real you. There's like very little filter when you're in a good creative collaboration.
Right.
You just kind of say whatever comes to mind, like, hey, let's do this crazy thing.
Yeah.
You know, and like, oh, that was really dumb. Thanks for letting me explore that.
Yeah.
You don't get to do that in a lot of other areas in life. You know,
right.
People expect you to be like spot on, like in jobs and school, like you got to ace that test. You got to get all that work done. But in music, it's just like anything goes, you know?
Yeah. Failure is like part of it. In order to keep that spirit that you're talking about, like you have to continually ride the edge of like maybe failing.
Oh yeah.
Because you otherwise you're just going to be like attempting to recreate, which, you know, attempting to recreate the same thing over and over again, you're also going to fail a lot too. Like there's no way to really avoid it. When you have the empty canvas or whatever, like there's always the possibility that the next thing you do will suck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I really love what you're saying though about like relationship. Art has so much to teach us about the way we construct our relationship to things or people or all that, like you're saying, because it's like, because you're kind of destined to fail in many ways, just like in a relationship, you're destined to fail. So it's all about what you're saying, like trust, cultivating people around you that are going to like accept those failures and be able to move on with you through them.
Yeah, there's a lot of faith, you know, especially I've had a few projects that I started myself. You know, when I moved to the city here, Chicago, I didn't really know a ton of people, and I stumbled into the scene that was really freaking cool. There are a lot of bands that I listen to this day. Like Opposites was one. Hockey, actually, Kelso, who I play in the Crustaceans with, was in Hockey, which was one of the first bands that I saw that totally blew me away. You know, they're a bunch of like young kids and they're just playing like the craziest music, and coming into the scene, creating relationships through that was really awesome. You know, I felt very accepted, even though I was playing some weird ass post-rock shit that didn't really fit in, but they were really accepting of me and my weirdness. So that was really cool.
Yeah.
So I feel like in my life, you know, through music is where I've made the most fruitful relationships, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
What you were saying about people like accepting who you are, you know, in that moment, it's like when we're expressing the art that we want to make in front of other people that are expressing the art that they want to make, you kind of like strip away like layers of socialization that we're like used to, you know, guarding ourselves or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that trust takes away some of the pressure of trying out new ideas in front of other people. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're all multi-instrumentalists here who just record a bunch of different weirdo music. So, you know, I feel like I can just only guess, Pasha, that you're the same way by this different place that you occupy in different bands and different instruments and stuff. I feel like, I mean, probably 10 years ago, I would feel less confident at band practice to say, let's try this really weird idea. But now I'm like, I'm looking for those weird ideas working with people. I'm like, just play the weirdest shit you can think of right now, please.
Yeah.
You know, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Was recording, it sounds like you've been recording your own music for a while then. Is that part of kind of like your creative process usually?
Yeah, I spend a lot of time in the room that I am in right now. Mm-hmm. I haven't, you know, periodically I've had spaces where I could just lock myself away and have all my gear set up and just whenever I feel like it, start making stuff. And right now is one of those times, which is fortunate.
Yeah.
So yeah, recording has been a big thing for me. Pretty self-taught. You know, I feel like a lot of people, I know quite a few people that went to school for audio engineering. I never ended up doing that, even though I almost did. Was very close to doing that, but it's just a fun thing for me. You know, I feel like I spent way too much time producing songs where I really should just hand it off to someone else and they can do it in like a few days.
Yeah, it's so easy when you're doing your own stuff to just get caught in the minutia of it, of things that just like don't matter really. Like nobody else is going to hear the way you like panned this one part from one side to the other for 2 seconds or something.
Yeah.
You know what? They won't hear it because everyone's listening on the little Bluetooth single speaker.
Yep.
I realized that the other day. I was testing my own mix and I had done double vocals that were like not very in tune with each other maybe, or just they didn't mesh well. And then you hear it in the mono version and you're like, oh, this is how people are listening to music.
Well, phone speaker.
Yeah.
I like it.
That's somehow more forgiving. I don't know.
Yeah, it's got a nice compression. Uh-huh. Gets rid of all the nasty overtones.
Just no low end.
Who needs it?
So with recording, you're also self-taught. Like, what are you trying to do? Like, are you writing songs usually and then just trying to get them down? Or are you actually using that as like a compositional tool? Like,
I definitely think it's the latter for me when I'm writing my own music, you know, and that's primarily how I do things, is I will mix parts as I go, you know, add processing and kind of form the song sound as I go, you know, and which is not super great for, you know, band setups.
Right.
So the Crustaceans, we've actually been working on an album since a little bit after COVID started. We were like, okay, let's just try to do something. So I got some gear and Nick has been recording drums from his house. David has been recording bass. Kelso has been recording vocals and synth. And I've been recording other stuff from my place. And we've all just been sending tracks back and forth. And it doesn't work as well because I start mixing before the song is done. And that's not good. It just sends you down, gives you more work in the end. You know, you have to like take it off and think, okay, like I have to do this again now because there's more parts and the sound is different.
Yeah.
But for my own stuff, because I know what I want, I usually mix it as I go. Production is part of the creative process, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if I add a bunch of cool effects to this part, I don't have to have as many parts because now this takes up so much room,
yep.
You know?
Yeah, totally. Well, we're excited to hear what you wrote, but before we hear it, we have this other segment that we do.
What does the internet say on the topic of the day? And if it's wrong, you can let us know by using the internet too.
Well, my internet research was a little meandery this time. I ended up taking...
I don't know if we've said what the prompt is yet.
Oh, the prompt is mutation. Uh-huh. Yeah, I guess I first off ended up taking this dumb quiz. And usually I don't do that type of stuff. But it was like, what superpower would you have based on answering all these questions about various situations?
Uh-huh.
And before I got to the end, it was like, okay, now we are about to tell you what superpower you have. And I had to answer like 20 questions about cleaning supplies and how likely I would be to buy them.
Did you answer those questions?
I did, you know, and that's that,
I would have stopped right there.
Well, each one you're like, okay, maybe this is the last one. And I'm not going to say the name of which products it was because I'm not going to help them on their crusade for advertising. But anyway, I got Flight. And I don't know how.
Oh yeah.
That's what I want. I mean, that's a cool one. I feel like they give everyone Flight. They're like, tell us what you think about bleach, and then now you can fly. So that was really dumb, and I won't subject you to.
So they gave you Flight based on personality traits?
Based on like, what would you do in this situation? And they give you four options, and oftentimes none of the options are good. Like, none of them are what I would do. And there was no none of the above button.
I would have abandoned this quiz very close.
I probably made it a little farther than I normally would have because I wanted it. I don't know
what
I was...
You wanted the answer for the podcast.
I don't know what I was looking for.
I thought you were going to say that they give you a superpower based on the type of or brand of bleach that you choose.
But there's probably just generic superpowers, right? There's not like digging through concrete or something like that.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how many there were. It did say if you don't like the answer you got here, you can do this thing. But I didn't continue because I would have had to answer more questions. So what I ended up finding was an article on PCMag.com about humans with real life sort of superhuman abilities, you know, real life mutants. And it was a big list of them, and I'm just going to share three of them that caught my interest. So first of all, without mutations, evolution would not be possible. Species could never gain new abilities or attributes. And scientists believe that every time the human genome duplicates itself, there are around 100 new mutations. That are pretty common and usually negligible.
So we're all mute.
We are, but they don't translate in ways that you know, lead to these extra abilities, except in these superhumans. So number one, I have Finnish Olympic skiing champion Eero Montaranta, who may have been, have you heard of this guy? You are nodding knowingly.
Yes, Finnish skiing.
Eero Montaranta may have been the first Finnish sportsman to test positive for hormone doping, but he didn't need to do it since he had genetic super endurance powers. Along with other members of his extended family, Montaranta had a condition resulting from a mutation in the erythropoietin receptor gene. This resulted in the ability to carry 50% more oxygen in his bloodstream, which is quite an advantage in endurance competition. Number two is Michel Lotito, who is a French entertainer known as Monsieur Mange Tout, or Mr. Eats All. Through his career, Michel consumed all manner of non-consumable objects.
Oh, I have heard of this guy.
You've heard of Mr. Eatsall? Made of glass, rubber, and metal, which he would often accompany by downing mineral oil.
Yeah, it has something to do with his stomach, right?
Yeah, a couple things, actually. He's got two issues going on. One of his most impressive feats was consuming an entire Cessna 150 airplane, which he ate in small bits over the course of 2 years.
How do you eat a Cessna airplane? One bite at a time.
One bite at a time. We all just eat our airplanes one bite at a time. Michel appeared to suffer from a condition known as pica, which is a disorder characterized by the appetite for non-consumable foods like dirt, rocks, and metals. Oh,
so he had an appetite for these
things.
He did have
that, and I think it's related maybe to an iron deficiency.
Right.
But what makes Michel truly notable is the abnormally thick lining in his stomach and intestines that made it possible for him to eat sharp metal objects and consume toxic substances. Ugh. Wow.
Like, what's on the other side?
I'm just trying to think of the usefulness of that power.
I mean, dirt's got minerals.
Yeah, and isn't it like pregnant women? Sometimes pregnant women want to eat soil because they are deficient in iron or some other mineral.
Like he can eat himself out of, you know, a vault or something.
Oh yeah. Well, I don't know
if he could.
Yeah, if he could chew through it.
If he could get it into bite-sized pieces, he could probably tunnel. I like the idea of it, though. All right, final one here is the actress Mary Lou Henner, which I've heard about this a bunch of times, and every time I hear it, I go, oh my God, that's amazing, and then I quickly forget.
Yeah.
And it's actually about memory. She has a condition known as hyperthymesia, or the ability to recall every tiny detail from her life going back decades. Mary Lou is one of only 25 confirmed cases of hyperthymesia, which allows her to pinpoint those small details. She's told reporters that rifling through her memory is similar to viewing little videos moving simultaneously. Mm-hmm. When somebody gives me a date or a year or something, I see all these little movie montages, basically on a time continuum, and I'm scrolling through them and flashing through them. Some scientists theorize that hyperthymesia is a result of an obsessive compulsive need to constantly review and therefore renew one's memories. But there's also a physiological link in which the temporal lobe and caudate nucleus of the brain are found to be enlarged in the afflicted area.
Right. You mean even if you're obsessed with thinking about everything that's happening, she has the ability to... actually see all those things.
And the mundaneness of it all. Yeah. Of like, oh, okay, I went... It's just like she just has a journal in her brain of like, okay, I went to lunch and had split pea soup that day in 1974 or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's incredible.
It's great.
There you have it. Three superhumans.
Nice.
What did you find?
Mutations.
Well, I went more into the animal kingdom. I mean, it's a lot of these are human-affected animals through testing or something like that. But just found a couple animal mutations that were interesting. The first one is these glow-in-the-dark cats.
Have
you heard of these? Apparently, these cats were made, they were doing AIDS research, and they injected unfertilized eggs, cat eggs, with rhesus macaque and jellyfish DNA, and the cats were then immune to feline AIDS, but it also made it so that they would glow under certain conditions of light, apparently.
Whoa.
Yeah, glow-in-the-dark cats. And then, okay, so then there's these goats with spider web milk. Have you heard of these?
No, what?
So these are another animal genetically modified by scientists, Nexio Biotechnologies, and the milk that they produce is used to make a material called BioSteel, and the product is 7 to 10 times stronger than steel, and it can stretch up to 20 times its length without losing any of its integrity.
What point in the process do they get the spider? So they just milk the goat and then they put...
The goat, my understanding, I mean, this is just like some tiny little article, but the milk, it has the spider silk in it. And then they do some process that then creates some elastic steel shit. Yeah, weird.
Frightening.
It takes all kinds.
Yeah. Okay, then we got the purple squirrel. Apparently there's just like around the world a few different sightings of these purple squirrels.
Oh, I've seen that guy on Reddit, I think.
And then finally, we got...
Wait, what made it purple?
This
squirrel is purple. Just trust us.
Daily Mail.
Yeah.
UK.
Oh, we've been to less reputable websites on this podcast. and finally...
Yeah, last week we went to scarymommy.com for some spooky facts.
Well, here's a spooky animal. Actually, it's pretty cute. The two-faced cat. You know, most animals, when they have two faces, they die... pretty young in age, but this cat known as Frankie and Louie, it's a result of one of the cats absorbing the other one while they're in the womb, and they lived a long and fruitful life, 15 years, something like that. Cat with two faces.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's what the internet said.
All right, we've come to the type in the podcast where we share our songs. Would you like to share your song with us, Pasha?
Yeah.
what did you make this week? What did you make this week? Tell us all about it. 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 Tell us all about it.
Is there anything you want us to know about the song before we hear it?
No.
Okay. We'll just listen to it.
Thank you.
Groovy, yeah. So what were you thinking about when you made it? What was kind of like your inspiration? Where'd you start?
Mutation. Yeah, so I think I was kind of thinking about life and how life has mutated throughout the last, you know, like 10 plus years or so. And I've had technology on my mind a lot. I recently watched The Social Dilemma, thinking about social media and how it has degraded the quality of life for myself. And I think a lot of other people primarily, you know, even though initially it was a good thing, it helps connect people. I mean, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for it. So,
right.
But I had a lot of lyrics for the song and I ended up just taking all of them out and just making it kind of repetitive. And I think like when I first heard, you know, the term mutation, it made me think of Kraftwerk. They take a lot of concepts that are like really, you know, just a single word or something, and they'll make a whole song about around it, which is why I ended up using mutation in the lyrics, because I was like, okay, let's just go Kraftwerk with it. But then I feel like I kind of departed that because there's a lot of, you know, organic stuff. I recorded some drums and guitar and bass for it. But yeah, I was trying to just hold the concept lightly. You know, like I said, initially I was like, oh, I have all these lyrics and just, I'm going to make a concept album about mutation. And then eventually I'm like, I'm just
going to come on the podcast and just play us like a 2-hour epic.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, I'm just going to like leave like one verse and that's going to be it. Just make it fun.
So were the words were first, you had kind of like these ideas in word form and then you created music to fit that?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was just the beat first, you know, I just had this kind of more like Latin rhythm in my head and I just laid it down and then everything kind of, you know, stemmed from that.
Yeah. It still feels like it keeps that like doon, doon,
doon, doon. Yeah.
Yeah. It's groovy.
Yeah. You had the beat and then you kind of just started like throwing ideas onto it basically.
Yeah, exactly. I usually work subtractively where I'll have a lot of stuff going and then I'll listen to it and be like, okay, there's like way too much going on here. And I'm actually going to remove pieces to kind of create a structure, you know?
Yeah.
I really like songs that kind of draw you in and are, you know, kind of like trancey in a way, you know, not like actual trance music, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I really like making that kind of stuff. So I'll just make a lot of loops or a lot of parts. They all kind of go together and then I'll just take things out and kind of create a structure that way. And then if it feels like it needs another movement or I guess mutation, you know, I'll kind of alter the mix, you know, the production gradually. I mean, this is honestly what I've been doing lately. Like this isn't always how it works,
sure.
But recently this is how I've been doing it, you know?
Yeah.
I've been trying to make things just sound like organic and not super processed, you know, just mm-hmm. like let them sound like they sound.
Mm-hmm.
Like I mentioned before, I wasn't a post-rock band for a while. So,
yeah.
And you know how it is with having lots of reverb and things like that. That was kind of the thing back in the day. And I think more and more especially now I listen to a lot of, you know, funk, a lot of like R&B and stuff like that. So I really like when things are a little bit cleaner, but I also like noise music. So I feel like that's kind of the direction that I've been going. Mm-hmm. It's like noise funk. I don't know.
Well, it's nice with that cohesion and that instant groove that you can lock into, you know, even if you're not tuning specifically into fluttery guitar, lead guitar parts that are going over it, you know, and introducing even like different modes and harmony and stuff. And it was especially nice for our prompt mutation because that cohesion was solid, but then it did like harmonically go into little different zones, but it never kind of dropped that main beat. So yeah, it's really cool. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I feel
excited
like
to hear your piece.
I feel like what you're saying about like this is just the phase that you're at, it's kind of like that. What I've noticed is like from being, you know, doing this podcast, like being a person that is kind of like constantly making stuff a lot, is that's a natural phase of like being a person or whatever, you know, like you just go through these phases where you're just like, I'm really into this one sound, or like this one pedal is really intriguing to me, or the way that I'm like making it is all kind of like a specific way. And then you just discover all of a sudden, like somebody gives you a guitar or something, and you all, you know, all the rest of your songs are for another year just like these guitar songs or something.
It's really easy to notice with our songs for the podcast because mm-hmm. we've done it for like over a year now. So, and we released the collections at the end of the year with all the songs just in chronological order. And it's like, oh, that was my tambourine phase. You know, that was like, I'm really into these tiny cymbals because I don't have good dampening in my room for drums. So I'm just always on the search for what cymbals naturally are going to sound better. So yeah, there's always specific instruments.
But even process, you know, like a lot of people mention, like, do lyrics come first or does music come first? And you make enough stuff and it's like nothing has to come before the other thing. It's just whichever one is happening in this moment, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks for sharing your song
with really
us.
Cool tune.
Do you want to go next?
I'll go next.
Okay.
I'll make a departure from my usual thing this week, and I will explain the process and what the song is about before I play it.
Okay.
So for Mutation, I wanted a song that went through a lot of different like filters and layers and really ended up different from where it started. And an easy way for me to do that is to collaborate. So I had friend of the show, Pony, over to play some bass. I set up on the drums and he and I just did a 5-minute improvisation. And then since I didn't want a 5-minute song, then I took those tracks and actually discarded the drums I did in the moment because I was trying to go. I don't know if Pasha, when you're jamming on drums with people, if you like to go for stuff that's a little outside of your ability. That's what I tend to do when I'm just jamming for fun. So I'm like trying stuff that I'm not quite hitting. But Pony is so solid. We had a click going while we were doing it. So I was able to just take his bass track, discard my drums. I shaved a minute and a half off of it. So we get, you know, a nice 3.5-minute song. And then I built all the melodic stuff around what he did. And what I asked him to play for the improv was, I told him it was Mutation. And I asked him to completely disregard any key center and just modulate with impunity and just kind of, you know, make me run around when I'm writing this melody. So he just played whatever came to mind, not favoring any key or anything in particular. Of course, he ended up, you know, it's hard to get a bass player or any musician to like completely disregard a key center. It's like pretty out there. So I ended up, I took the bass track and I just wrote melodies and lyrics and a whole bunch of keyboards and percussion and stuff. And then I was able to like build everything around each section around what he was doing specifically. But what he did was improvised. So it's like, it's kind of an interesting process.
Mm-hmm.
As for what the song is about, it is about the culture, like any culture, not my culture, but any culture's caging of the primal human aspects of humans, you know. That process leaves young people with a lot of questions. So it's called A Child with Some Questions.
Ending.
Whoa.
My goal was to make the most out there song that I've made, because sometimes I'll do like pretty pop stuff on this show, you know, or like country, or like I'll do a lot of different like classic forms of songs. We did like chorales one week, you know, we get into the different genres and stuff, but I was like, I want to make the most out there weird one. And hearing it now, it's like, I didn't like harmonically didn't really get that out there. I ended up like,
that's
really,
some weird
like,
modulation, but it doesn't, it yeah, stays in a place where you like,
I like,
there's a tonal center.
I reinforce and right, tidy up all these corners, you know, mm-hmm, of what he's doing on the bass. So I still like, I've gotten 1% as weird as I want to get with songwriting so far. So it's just a constant process of working on it. Uh-huh. And or maybe 2%, you know, maybe that was 1% more weird than I've gotten.
Uh-huh.
But but it was really fun to work on, and it was like a puzzle, you know, yeah, just trying to make a melodies around someone else's bass line. And then like, I've never had a song where it's just like a full beat only comes in the last like 45 seconds. I don't think I've done that. So that was new.
Yeah. It's so interesting to think about what is the idea of like pushing that boundary of like what you feel comfortable with, you know, and it's so uncomfortable to go outside of like the thing that you normally do. At least this is the way it is for me, that when I'm experimenting with something, when I listen back, it's not as weird as I felt it was, you know, it just was so far out. It wasn't in my kind of like current conception of like the way that I currently do music or something like that.
I was wondering when I did the vocals, like there's a lot of layers at the end and some of them are like that whispery high, like I'm a child with some questions. But then there's also ones where I like belting voice did it across the room. And so Ayal lives upstairs and my studio is in the basement. So there's a few floors between, but
I never hear you.
But I was wondering if you did this time because I was screaming. I was literally just screaming.
It's not quite open window season yet.
I'm a child with some questions over and over again in the basement. It was really fun. And I heard somebody walk by to do laundry and then like set the laundry thing down and then walk away. So I didn't know if it was you. It was fun though.
I really loved that, just FYI.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, that was so cool. Yeah, I was, it kind of reminded me of, okay, it was like really Prague. And just I think because you were just going crazy with, you know, around the bass line. And I got a lot of like post-punk, you know, just because the drums weren't, like you said, weren't traditional, you know, they weren't like, here's like a kick and a snare. It was, you know, reminded me of like almost like Joy Division-y kind of like weirdness, but you know, harmonically and melodically, it was just super cool how you tied. I wouldn't be able to tell you there's no harmonic center because you kind of like made it happen with the vocals. So yeah, really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it seems like you use the bass as the melody a lot, basically. Like
I did, but the way we're used to hearing music is with the bass as the bass, you know? And so I mean, literally just copied a lot of his harmonic movement on other instruments, you know, and I do a third up on guitar on top of like the keyboard parts. And it's like, you know, when he did it, first of all, he didn't remember anything he did because this was just 5 minutes where it's just like, let's play whatever.
Yeah.
And I sent it to him and it was funny for him to hear it back because he just didn't remember doing a lot of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. We talk a lot about constraints, you know, and I feel like that's just like a really great, it's nice, like that's a nice way to get constraint is to like have somebody just come in, play something where it's like, I'm not going to go in and like replay their bass part or something like that. You know, you're just like, okay, I'm going to use this and make something around it.
That reminds me now what he said, I'm glad I didn't have to learn this now. Like, because it's such a weird...
Yeah.
And it's only 3.5 minutes, but it like, it feels... This is not disparaging of my own work, but it feels longer because it goes to so many places.
Uh-huh,
you know?
Yeah,
so
it's dense.
Yeah.
It's very dense. And it's in... Part of the intensity of it was I record, so I play an electric tenor guitar, and I play it through this tiny little Blackstar amp that we talk about quite a bit on the show here, because it has distortion and it has delay, and you can kind of like ring a chord out and then affect the knobs in real time. It's like what I use instead of pedals, usually, and the sound that I had going on at this time was very crazy and destructive, and that's because it was running out of batteries. So then I was like, oh, I like the weird running out of battery sound, but I can't do very many takes because it's really gonna,
it's gonna run out of batteries.
Yeah, and then I'll have to like carefully put like one new battery, take one. So I just did first take stuff on most of it, just because that was the moment I had.
Yeah.
So yeah, there are all of these little things that come up along the way that lead it to the ultimately mutated phase that it's in now. What did you make?
Okay. So my idea was that I was going to take myself saying the word mutation and then I created a song just out of that. I was like, you know, wanting to do something new or different than I usually do. And I just hadn't messed around a little bit with kind of like the sampler in the program that I use. I use Ableton, but I hadn't really kind of like gone to the depths of it at all. So just wanted to just kind of like use this as an exercise to learn a little bit about the software. And I kind of started making the thing, and then this story kind of came to mind as I was making it. So I kind of started conceiving of the song as basically...
This was last night, right? Not to give you away.
Oh, but, yeah. Last night.
I've been like meticulously working on mine a little bit every day for like a week.
It was like, oh, I got a couple hours. I can't... Sometimes I just like can't get myself to... You know, it's like I need the pressure of the just like... procrastination to
motivation
really make it happen.
Kind of out the window in so many ways right now.
Well, I was motivated to be like doing, like I was working on music, like doing creative projects all day, but then just like not working on the song. And I knew I had the idea of like doing it all just sampled. So anyway, I started doing that. And then the story came to mind of basically like a scientist, you know, attempting to figure out how to change themselves into like all these different animals.
Mm-hmm.
And then, speaking of squirrels, they end up getting stuck as a squirrel, basically. So let's call it a purple, squirrel.
That's the true origin of the purple squirrel.
Judge for yourself.
That was 100% a squirrel sound.
Right?
I feel like we missed an opportunity for you to have us guess the animal, because like it was so undeniably squirrel
sound.
That's
what I thought. Yeah, someday we'll all be squirrels.
Really cool.
Thanks. Yeah, it was fun to just kind of mess around with.
Took you on a journey.
Yeah. tried to get a little bit of that mutation, you know, like the actual feel of mutating in there.
Like
yeah,
rising sine wave keyboards kind of giving way to like bigger...
Yeah.
Different chords.
I had a lot of fun kind of like, I don't know, just sound is just so weird. Like it is when we hear, you know, a kick drum or whatever, it is just like these specific frequencies, you know? So it's like you can take any sound and like accentuate specific frequencies that are the same as a kick frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll all of a sudden like have like a kick drum type sound or whatever, or a mm-hmm. synth type sound or a string type sound. Yeah. I don't know. It kind of blows my mind. But and it blows my mind that there's people that are, you know, skilled at it in a certain way where they like understand what's happening, you know, they can kind of process that there's certain sounds are these specific frequencies or whatever. I don't think about that level of like engineering or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Are you talking about like synthesis?
Exactly. Yeah. I just kind of like turn knobs and try to see what happens, you know, like I'm not that intentional with really making it happen a lot of times.
Well, sometimes it feels like not knowing or thinking about that stuff is a more direct way to just express things.
Yeah, except for when I'm like, I want this specific thing to be happening with the sound.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess that's what the internet is for, is just that I can like search on the internet, how do people do this thing or whatever, but had fun doing it.
This was a fun prompt. Thanks for choosing this one.
Yeah, all right. That's it, right?
Just about. Pasha, if you have any upcoming releases or anything going on that you wanted people to check out?
Yeah, I have a couple. I just finished an album. So, you know, I released that song, An Animal, a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I have an album that's ready. It's pretty weird. It definitely goes places. If anybody wants to check it out, I'm going to release that probably.
What is the name you're releasing it under?
Pasha Pear.
And is that, where would people go to find that on the internet?
My website, PashaPear.com.
Uh-huh.
Or Bandcamp.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm also going to be releasing a single with the Crustaceans pretty soon, probably in the next week or two.
Nice.
And we're also going to be releasing a short album within a month or two as well.
Cool. So, and that's spelled like station, like crustacean, instead of C-A.
Crust of a bread.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it was one of us not knowing how to spell a crustacean and just joking around and then being like, okay, maybe we should just make it this because everyone's going to think that we're dumb, but
yeah.
We're in on the joke, so it's fine.
I mean, the Beatles did it.
Yeah. At the time, we were all lengthy people. Just made sense.
What is the like local music scene? Like, are people starting to talk about having shows in Chicago again and that kind of thing, or pretty
there are a couple bars that are trying to get bands to play, but
yeah,
I don't think anyone's super on board with that yet.
Yeah it's a lot colder there than it is here. People are doing like outdoor shows every once in a while, and it seems like a couple bars are starting to maybe think about doing it,
so,
like next month or something.
Not a ton of shows yet, and it's probably good
because,
you know, so yeah, we're just all kind of waiting
till
we can start playing again.
Yeah. We're all missing that, I'm sure.
So I mentioned the Hostel Euphoria earlier in the show and just looked them up. So I guess they have been around since 2011. I didn't realize. Yeah, a true like artist collective. They would host weekly shows called What About Chicago, and I guess they did a podcast and workshops and all kinds of stuff. Just a really cool space, and you know, that's been impacted definitely by the pandemic, and they are switching over. They are partnering now with a nonprofit called Casa Al Fatiha, which translate to House of the Opening. Coming up really soon on March 25th, they are doing a Zoom, which is open to the public. And it's going to be just a celebration of everything that Euphoria has been, and people sharing memories and, you know, sharing what a space it had been. And now they're transitioning over to be a space that will, and they're still looking for funding for this right now and working with a few groups, but they are transforming the space to provide housing for LGBTQ+ individuals seeking asylum. And they're partnering with the Interfaith Community of Detained Immigrants, a Chicago-based nonprofit organization that matches asylum seekers currently in ICE custody with community-based housing. Proof of housing is a crucial step in securing release from ICE detention for all asylum seekers, but can be an especially daunting barrier for queer, trans, and gender nonconforming individuals who make up over 30% of refugees who go through the system, which I didn't realize. So please, people, do. You can find it on their Facebook, Hostel Euphoria, and go there on the 25th and watch this Zoom, and there will be people talking, I assume, about switching over to try to help detained people get housing and asylum. So more, you know, great local things happening from this cool place that I was just so lucky to happen to be in town with my bandmate Ethan Fox Tucker, who's been on this show a few times, and we play on a radio show, and those shows get done at like 9 o'clock or something, so mm-hmm. we're able to go to this house show and see what those cool Chicago kids are up to. I felt it was a good sign to meet you there, and it was really cool that you did this show with us, so
yeah,
thank you.
Thanks for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for inviting me. This was super fun.
Yeah.
There's only one thing left to say.
We can bang on pots and pans.
and still kick out some Honest Jams.
Honest Jams podcast is written, recorded, and produced by Ayal Alvis and A. Walker Spring, and edited by me. Reach us at honestjamspodcast@gmail.com. Special thanks to Victor Nash for mixing our theme. Special thanks to Oogie. And thank you for listening. We can't wait to hear what you make.